A few bald facts should be established at the top, lest they become occluded by the fog of war, or at least as we go to air, the fog of possible imminent and or threatened war. The big one is that Ukraine is an independent sovereign state, officially recognised as such by everyone, including, it is important to remember, Russia, which opened an embassy in Kiev in 1992, around a year after Ukraine became independent following the demise of the Soviet Union.
This morning, the New York Times reporting, quote, "The week before intensive diplomatic meetings began, American and Ukrainian officials watched from afar as Russia began emptying out its embassy in Kiev."
In 1997, Russia signed the Russian-Ukrainian Friendship Treaty, which, among other provisions, recognized Ukraine's territorial integrity and the inviolability of its borders. That treaty was allowed to lapse in 2019, Ukraine having decided, all things considered, that there wasn't much point in renewing it.
The Russian Federation definitely neglected the basic provisions of the treaty, violating the territorial integrity of Ukraine, committing armed aggression, carrying out military and economic pressure, and interfering in the internal affairs of the country.
As an independent sovereign state, Ukraine, like every other independent sovereign state, is entitled to aspire to and apply for membership of whichever international alliances and or unions it pleases. Ukraine's tentative preparations for joining the EU and its hopes of joining NATO, both enshrined in Ukraine's constitution, are therefore entirely a matter for Ukraine and its prospective partners and none of anyone else's business. Russia, you will have read, begs to differ. And begs to differ to the extent that it is, at the very least, allowing the spectre of a major land war in Europe to haunt us afresh. Russia believes, or claims to believe, that NATO is stealthily undertaking an aggressive encroachment upon its western frontier.
NATO is no friend of Russia. They decided that they don't want to be friendly. They decided they don't want to have the founding act between NATO and Russia to be the basis of our relations. They called Russia and now China, and actually Russia and China together, the threat to NATO. NATO is looking for the meaning of its future existence.
In recent weeks, Russia's Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov has accused NATO of being a geopolitical project aimed at, as he put it, taking over territories orphaned by the collapse of the Warsaw Treaty Organization and the Soviet Union. The verb preferred by the Soviet Union's former constituents at the time and since was not orphaned, but liberated. Lavrov's deputy, Sergei Ryabkov, has made several thunderous warnings against what he described as further NATO expansion. So, does Russia have a case? The short answer is no, at which I'll refer you back to the bit about Ukraine being an independent sovereign state which can do what it likes, and observe that NATO is accepting applications for membership, not conquering territories at gunpoint. And even if it was, Russia, given its recent activities in Ukraine and Georgia, wouldn't have much of a leg to stand on there. The longer answer is the one about Russia's historical paranoia about threats from its west and its notions of grandeur rooted in nostalgia for the Soviet Empire. And these can also be pretty briskly dispensed with. Because, with all due respect to Russia's arduous history and the indisputably heroic sacrifices made in its defence, no sane person imagines that France or Germany harbours the vaguest desire to take another pop at it. Russia's present position in this respect is no more or less ridiculous than, say, the United States attempting to dictate terms to Canada for fear of some rerun of the War of 1812. Nor does anybody in possession of all their marbles much miss the Soviet Union, least of all, of course, in Ukraine, where Stalin starved millions of people to death in the 1930s.
I could buy for my salary 2 loaves of bread a month. So that's only how we could survive. But the peasants were dying.
Which leaves us with the always diverting question of why Russia is doing whatever it is Russia thinks it is doing. Russia may just be conducting, again, the kind of belligerent and tedious mischief which has become the hallmark of its weirdly adolescent diplomacy. It is possible to see Russia's present behaviour as exactly what it was rolling the pitch for when it first invaded Ukraine in 2014. Ignite a conflict, return it to a low simmer, and turn it back up as and when it amuses and or whenever it is felt that Moscow is being paid insufficient attention. If what Russia actually wants is to keep Ukraine out of NATO and the EU, mission accomplished. Neither organisation, whatever their official utterances, wants to buy that kind of trouble. Seen like this, it's difficult to perceive what Russia would really gain by invading even more of Ukraine, and easy to see what Russia could lose. Lives, money, such global standing as it still possesses, to say nothing of the ironic likelihood of encouraging Finland and Sweden into NATO. But it's also depressingly plausible that the Kremlin is thinking on a loftier plane than that of mere realpolitik. Last summer, Russia's president, Vladimir Putin, unburdened himself of a 7,000-word screed entitled On the Historical Unity of Russians and Ukrainians, the broad and somewhat menacing gist of which you may glean from the title, and within the text of which you will look long and hard for the mildest expression of interest in what the people of Ukraine think about this. Maybe he does see renaming Kiev as Putingrad as the capstone of a legacy to rival that of Peter the Great. The most optimistic hope is that Russia is trying to wring concessions from the West. A moratorium on Ukraine's accession to the EU and or NATO, recognition of Russia's sovereignty over Crimea, some other imaginary victory in an invented cause, for which Putin might even agree to end the current conflict in eastern Ukraine, therefore claiming kudos as a peacemaker as well.
The Norwegian Nobel Committee has decided to award the Nobel Peace Prize to
Vladimir Putin.
But whatever does happen next, the key thing to keep in mind will be this, that it will be what Russia wanted, when the option of being a collegial and constructive European country and an admired and respected great power was right there all along. For Monocle 24, I'm Andrew Miller.